to March 6, 1973, 8:30 a.m. room 309, case 852. We're having a hearing on Senate Bill 389 and a work session on Senate Bill 159.
Question.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm George Miller, representing the Department of Revenue. And there's just a couple of things I'd like to point out to you. The Senate Bill 389, dealing with the members composing the County Board of Equalization. Senate Bill 389 would do away with the requirement that the member of the county court or Board of County Commissioners select one of their group to be chairman of the County Board of Equalization. Also, the same situation in the Budget Committee member, and appoint instead one non-office holding freeholder. In House Bill 2186, which started out dealing just with the composition of the Budget Committee, and it clarified a problem that apparently existed because of an opinion from Circuit Court down in Lane County that said that shall not be a requirement that a freeholder be a member of the County Budget Committee. So in House Bill 2126, they amended the law dealing with the composition of the Budget Committee, and also somebody brought to their attention that the Board of Equalization included a freehold member, and so they changed that to call it a non-office holding county resident, which would be in paragraph C under section 1 of 389. And
paragraph C?
Yes, it would now read on line 16, page 2, a county resident who shall be appointed by the first two members of the board. I don't know, in talking with our attorneys or the department, there apparently has been no decisions concerning the members of the Board of Equalization as to whether they may or may not be a freehold, the requirement that they own property. And so I don't know really whether it's a problem, but you might wish to take it into consideration. The composition of the Board of Equalization that stands now, and I think you all realize, is a member of the County Commissioner Board of the County Court or Board of County Commissioners, one member of the Budget Committee, and then the freehold member, non-office holding freehold member. This thing has been juggled around over the years. At one time, the assessor even appeared as a member of the Board of Equalization. When they did away with the assessor off the board and changed the composition of the board to put on the court member and the Budget Committee member, it was with the feeling that they would have some relationship to the activities in the assessor's office, and since at least those two members are on the Budget Committee, maybe recognize some of the problems that the assessors are having and be a little more free with the money to support administration of the tax laws. And that's about the extent of my testimony. I know that I should say one thing more. I know why this originated in Lane County, because the feeling of the people down there on the commission that it does take a lot of time from these busy county administrators. For instance, last year, over the total state of Oregon, there were 5,430 appeals to the County Board of Equalization. In those instances, there were 2,738 sustained evaluations, 2,579 reduced, 94 increased, and some other disposition made of 19 cases.
Where do they go after that, the County Board of Equalization?
No, they have two alternatives, depending upon the value of the property and what kind of property. If it's a real property and the value of either land or the improvements is less than $25,000, they can elect to go to the Small Claims Division of the Tax Court or to the Department of Revenue. They go to the Small Claims Division, that's the end of it. They have no further right of appeal. If they come to the Department of Revenue, then they can go on from there to the regular division of the tax court and on to the Supreme Court. No. Not on valuation matters. There are a couple of other areas that the county courts do become involved in. One is when a resident is burned, for instance, prior to July 1, then they appeal to the county court for a refund of the taxes that have been paid. Off the top of my head, that's the only one I can think of.
Well, your main concern here is that Lane County Circuit Court decision.
That would be one, and the action taken by the House in the House Bill 2126 in making that amendment. I don't really know whether
change freeholder to resident?
To county resident.
Now, what was the agency that was involved in Lane County?
What were the agencies?
Yeah, what was the commission or whatever it was connected?
It was a budget committee. Composition of the budget committee, as far as I know. Yes, there would be one member of the budget committee, so that probably should be changed. Though I don't know whether it would affect. Apparently, there have been no decisions concerning the Board of Equalization and the requirement of a non-office holding freeholder or a freeholder period.
Is there any questions? Is anybody else here to testify on issue 389? I think Senator Sabin is going to show up someday on that. So let's put this in the back burner this morning. Let's go to 159. That's the landlord's tenant bill. John Williamson, you have with you here House Bill 2424. John Williamson already made kind of a comparative analysis of these two bills that I thought might be helpful in that to see how that 2424 treats similar situations that we have in SB 159. This bill is a major piece of legislation and a place where I do not know what the individual committee members criticism in the area of the bill generally. We can go to work on those and say that might could be satisfactory to God's favorite bill.
We won't start with members.
I know the one who does it. That's out of order.
Chairman, what's the status of 2424?
It was introduced after 159 was, and I don't know where it went. Mr. Church, you're familiar with 2424. Thank you. Shannon, who sponsored the February 13th amendment to 169?
February 13th amendment? You know who that?
I don't know about dates, but.
Mobile home farm.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's, that was in Gilmore.
Finance
referees legally claim or get an excuse, he could provide that if either party asked for that, then the fact that there would be a presumption to put on his own doubt, the other party has to overcome, and both parties ask for it, that would be the only excuse to sign the full
party. I'd also feel that okay, it should be a consideration really changing the factual locations on landmark tenants too. Hopefully, we have that other bill that seems to unify factual limitations for everything for 2 years. I don't think that will go anywhere, but I think that these kinds of actions, particularly the oil basin, the other one, the bottom stage in Athens, is very high in the past. I think the 1 year
is actually important. Is there a statute of limitations? No, that's the only place you
5 years, we come back to wait for the month, and remain in that time.
Step further, I'm telling you, I think it's important to keep in mind that uniformity extends only to Oregon, because the testimony you have is no state's adopted there, so it's the uniformity not adopted. Perhaps other states later would adopt it. I can't believe they would, but perhaps they would. I think the question is then, do we, I sense no support or relatively little support for uniform laws and abuse. If I'm correct in that, then the only thing left for us to do is find those areas to try to meet the indicators. If there are any, and I believe there are, it needs some remedial legislation and zero in on those and abandon the uniform commission. I joined by the Burns and voting against the commission budget. I think it's just that, along with the co-op and a bunch of other budgets that keep uniformity of mediocrity. So, maybe you can do find out. I realize two members are not here. Now, let me, now, it's clear the areas that you mentioned, and it's clear all 45 have gotten all the testimony, and areas possible. I would like to be able to, and that's not a good thing, find some way of having you dispute the photograph without having the court facilities involved, as well as the department that we want.
If I were a landlord and I was required to send all the paperwork and all the security deposits to the regulation, I would imagine I would have to
Well, I think a lot of security deposits really have a whole lot of sense. And maybe that's part of my check. But when you start talking about the last month's rent, then you're talking about something else. When I get a landlord, there seems to be an awful lot of problems to be resolved. A lot of them just got a poor business practice. They don't get that last month's rent, and they say, well, I'm going to have that, and I don't have a tenant. Well, then it seems like they've got to make a choice. And it's kind of obvious. They don't get the last month's rent. But if you, this is one, Chairman, that identifies the area concern, that's one brought up. I was much of a resident. And trying to have to sweat through a bill of this magnitude and just the attempt to find things like fit and habitable, at least to my satisfaction, would be a lot easier to settle the problems that are problems and not draw in a bunch of people. So it's fit and habitable, that's something that bothers me. Of course, they find that. But that's the whole problem. Really the bottom. Sometimes it's over that list of bills, too. I do agree with that. What you suggest is possible avenue to consider as far as arbitration. Have some, negotiations to go take that. Too bad the industry is going to go along that like the capacity is going to start to take part in the industry. Pass a law that doesn't go along with the association arbitration.
I think that, Charlie, have you got any, from here what you said, there was a committee team who wants to direct the attention to rather than an overall product. Six consensus, I don't think, but it's a little flagging surface almost there. But that means our efforts are specific. We're going to be taking the press on.
I think that there are four or five basic areas that I think, some of which have been mentioned, that if you address yourself to them, that could solve the problem. The uniform bill is not what you want, but the security deposit problem, the retaliatory eviction problem, disclosure, statute of limitations, and then the landlord's lien, and the repair and deduct, and allowing tenants to deduct some amount from rent.
Okay.
First is security deposit. Second is retaliatory eviction. Right. Well, those two are the major problems that we feel are need to be remedied. Then the two that you haven't said that I think
security deposit. What's the first?
Retaliatory eviction, security deposit, then the landlord's lien, and repair and deduct rent withholding. I think are the four major things.
How do you visualize in this repair and deduct?
I'm all for that.
Well,
I'd like to know.
The bill says, and I think it's a good basic section in section 29, it says that if there's a problem with the premises that can be remedied for less than $100, a tenant gives notice to the landlord and says, look, this problem's here. If you don't fix it in 14 days, I'm going to fix it myself. The landlord has 14 days to fix it. There's nothing sacred about 14 days. It could be 21 days. If the landlord fails to fix it, then the tenant can use his rent money up to $100, and likewise, there's nothing sacred about $100. It could be $50 to make that repair. I think that will encourage landlords to keep the place up to begin with, and will encourage them to fix it when they get a tenant complaint.
What if I thought I was a good tenant and did it myself, then put it in the bill?
Well,
if I was a tenant.
Well, you'd have to give the landlord notice that you were going to do it, and you'd have to have 14 days.
He would have to do it.
What?
He would have to do it. What if the fix the thing, what if you felt that I would be repaid and the landlord disagreed with
you? Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
Well,
Thank you,
I don't think that, well, if the paint were seriously chipping and so forth, it might cause a problem, but then you'd go back to Section 21 of the Act and determine whether there was a breach that actually materially affected health and safety and made the premises unfit and uninhabitable.
You're back to fit and inhabitable.
Right.
Which we've been trying for 2 months to, some of us feel, or some members of the committee have been telling us, I may feel that fit and habitable can be defined, others say the courts can do it. I remain unconvinced. It seems to me, perhaps an outlandish example, but the landlady from Eugene has testified, I think it was navy blue enamel between the floors and ceiling. I need to get into decision making whether that constitutes fit and habitable or habitable.
Well, section 21 of House Bill 2424, section 21 of House Bill 2424, the landlord's bill, sets out some basic minimums that premises have to meet. They're taken mainly from California law. I don't think they're as good, but they are. They're more certain, and as good as the Uniform Act, the 159. Well, Uniform Act does.
No, this is more defined. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
2424
laws aside? Yes.
Why isn't it a
good?
Because it doesn't leave a vague,
fit, and habitable. Well, there's two real basic reasons, I think, but it could be fixed up. If the committee wanted to have a more certain standard, you could adopt the one from
the landlord's bill. It does not require structural safety of walls or floors, and it does not, well, that's one other thing.
Yeah.
It's in that analysis, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Let's go to
Kind
of 159, 29. If I understand the procedure here, and I'm a final renter, tell my landlord, let's say we have a tenant, and I'm just not active. And he doesn't say anything about it for 14 days. So I go ahead and think, where does due process fit into that 14 day period? What out the landlord has? If he determines that he's going to get in 7 weeks,
he could evict you for not paying the rent. If you didn't pay the rent. The landlord, the tenant is taking a tough. The tenant is risking possession.
And that 14 day period, though. And 14 days is up, and I can't. What kind of procedure is allowed for the landlord to protect himself in the 14 day period, knowing that after the 14 days is up, he's going to be paying, but he wants to set him up?
So, just go ahead and.
I think he can evict the tenant if the tenant has done something.
That's the point I'd like to make. How can he evict the tenant? Because the tenant complains to the landlord of a violation under Section 21, set habitable. So the chain of events is the tenant says that bedroom is not set habitable because the tenant is set. And he has 14 days. He doesn't do it, he detains it to death. And you say you can evict him, but you've got a retaliatory eviction provision that says if you complain to the landlord, you've got another year.
Of an actual violation, right?
Well, yeah, but it says the tenant complains to the landlord of a violation under Section 21 of this Act, and Section 21 of this Act, just that inhabitable, you just go around the circle.
Well, the tenant is taking the risk that if he's actually repairing and deducting something that's not a violation, he gets evicted. So that the tenant's risking possession of his home by doing this.
But you haven't answered my question.
What?
Why is the due process for the landlord in the 14-day period?
Well, nothing can happen within the 14-day period.
Right.
The tenant can't even
sit. So, if the tenant decides that he's going to finish the roof, it's going to be right?
After the 14-day period.
But it's going to be finished. The landlord ought to know him.
Well, I said it as a teacher. I think you're using an unfair example because I don't think most people are talking about pool of a place. Something that cleaning a place ordinarily does not detract from the habit of
facilities. What I'm trying to point out, Mr. Chairman, is my concern about the word fit and habit. It needs to be defined, and that's why I'd much rather solve problems that are problems rather than making problems. And I think that's what we do when we just draw that loose language that is going to be settled in court. It's going to cost everybody money, right? Let's solve the problem 24, 24, Section 21.
Structural defect, and then with his analysis, he points out substantial compliance with applicable code, acceptable codes in effective time of installation, and maintenance of ventilation, air conditioning, and other facilities and appliances, including elevators, supplied by the landlord.
I wonder how the person such as didn't have or adult drive past duty. I wonder if in analyzing the various criteria that didn't have for specified and not for 24, if very nearly all of them didn't come within the scope of applicable code, that is, for structural concerns about stairways. I go through nearly electrical lighting,
insurance disposal system, the funding facility, the garbage, the company garbage receptacles, door stairway drainage. Those are all subject to various and existing codes, which I'm wondering if by reference to, we wouldn't be safer than by
I have no problem about tightening up the language to take out the inhabitable, just as long as there's some standards that a tenant can enforce. And I, if you want me to work in any way, I'm doing that. I'd be glad to. I point out in the House Bill 24, they just require code compliance with the code at the time of installation. And, well,
the 100-year-old house,
the 50-year-old
house,
the
code
may change. Right, and most of the codes, at least in Portland, take that into consideration and only require that they comply with the code at time of installation, except in some situations that you are in the court. The second thing on Section 21 of House Bill 2424 is it does not require facilities provided by the landlord, elevators, air conditioning, to be maintained, which the Uniform Act does do. But I think that Senator Meeker's problem with the vagueness could be tightened up so that it would not leave that open litigation. We did have four bills in last time dealing with specific problem areas. Everyone said, well, these are sloppily drafted legal aid bills, and forget them. And then, so we thought, well, this time there's a landlord, a Uniform Act that's obviously not sloppy. Yeah.
Is there any more questions? Chairman, this may be awkward, and I'd like to one or more of us follow up and see if we can. You picked out the security deposit. I think everybody is coming in, and most of us, that's a top spot. The territory of eviction is, I think, an important but also a very weak part, I view in the bill. The landlord lien is unsatisfactory, I think, historically, both the tenants and the landlord. We've had some, all the way from snakes to the garbage that the tenant leaves, and the landlord is really in a risky business when he exercises any kind of control over it. I think that's one area that really does need some close look by the legislature. The repair and deduct, I have no problems with, unless we can tighten up the language. And there may be others, and there may be other parts of the bill that were similar in law, and I think that's a good idea. But maybe the way to do it is to attack those four areas that Charlie is.
I just have a question. Yes, and I don't want to think Harvey is right, and I don't want to consider this until I turn over the young man in the office. But I wonder on page 3 of 159, the special services process, subsection 2 of number 9, our responsibility, I think, is to render a concise and as unrelated as possible that very logical state. Why do we even need a separate chapter on a service process?
That section has to be deleted.
I mean, I think this is probably a boilerplate section for a state that might not have it comprehensively.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I need to think with that in mind. If I am correct in our assessment that we're not, there doesn't seem to be sympathy for slightly following the commissioner's recommendations, it may be something to do is go through 159 and take Charlie's analysis here and compare it to 2424 and see what parts can be eliminated. Senator John Burns indicated he's just taken out half a page of the omnibus bill and perhaps just trim off some of the other aspects that he's just going on.
Okay, my only problem with that is that where we're heading, whether we end up at 159 or whether we have to plug this into the existing law. I didn't want anyone to think by my reference to the
three or four items that I mentioned, that you want to have some law and stuff to build, to find the key to the in that bill.
Then the other landlordly ideas that are fine. This is the thing that's unsatisfactory in the way it's handled for landlords as well as the tenants. And it's so expensive for a landlord to exercise the thing that I think most of them are telling them to get. And you gotta go with that because they end up warehousing stuff or hauling it around, and I think they're extremely vulnerable for doing that. And all it does really is usually takes the personal effects of the family and you can use it at all to lift it up with personal effects. The stuff is worth nothing on the market, but to replace it, it's worth a substantial amount. So at most, it's blackmail, and it just doesn't help the landlord, so it doesn't make it worse. Again, all that can be resolved is landlords just get their last month's rent in a lease. Now, they're on a month-to-month tenancy, that's a different problem. But, I guess you can't force them to do it. You can't require, or maybe you can't. Nobody goes into tenancy without the paying too much rent in the bank, and the landlord will hit money, but that would solve an awful lot of problems, but that was true. So I gather we can't afford to do it, but I think we have to do it, I think, in whatever we do. The statute of limitations that Senator Burns mentioned, I think, is a legitimate area. We all agree, I think, on the statutory evictions, that's not how you handle a tenant problem, not kicking them out. Securing deposits, I think the only way you're going to do anything with that is to not let the landlord use that money while he's holding us, but I think that you must require fewer deposits requests because it's not this money, it's not this until some act in the future occurs, if at all. And I think the disclosure, I don't think anybody has a problem with that, is that who the tenant goes to is a complaint, they need their own or wherever it is. And then on the retaliatory evictions, and the repair and the duct, they're tying together. I don't know how you handle it if it's things don't have to be in the same date period. You're going to have it all because it's longer than that by the end of the tenancy has changed. So it doesn't do any good. But those are the ones that we've all put our finger on, and the tough ones, I think, is the repair and the duct and the landlord's lease. And I think the rest of it can be security deposit, but I guess we kind of. Not the handle too, but those are the three problems, two by the landlord needs and the pair of the
guys.
Senator Burns.
I wonder if Charlie could, or anybody else present is interested, could provide us with a little bit of legal analysis of the import of Section 11 and 12.
11
and 12? That's their story, imposition of an obligation of good faith. That's something new in law as far as my concerned, and I don't exactly know what that means. So maybe there's an analogy to existing law or to state law. That's what that is. Then the definition is a matter of statute of impossibility. Again, in my experience of statutory law, this is something new, and I have many cases on it. But, I just want to certainly understand the import of that. These things from these tapes seem new to be in the nature of questions of fact, determined by prior fact. What the effect of the labeling of the statute has on the traditional interpretation of my, I don't know exactly, but I don't know how long I'm in there, but maybe a little bit of help. But I don't
know if you the obligation of good faith on unconscionability, I believe, is taken from the UCC. I think the commissioner's thought was that they would make it clear that contract concepts apply to rental contracts. I believe so. I'm sure the obligation of good faith is not positive about the unconscionability, but I can check that out. I don't think Section 12 defines unconscionability. It says what the court can do when it finds an unconscionable provision. And I think it's still left up to the to try to back in a court to determine what's unconscionable.
Wasn't there another area of concern, this right of access that was debatable?
payable, but we're going to have a problem going out of testimony. The present law that this does set down standards, though, for what will be. That is a problem. House Bill 2424 that requires 24 hours notice of this bill for 2 days.
Right now, they keep going drop
the well, it's reasonable, and again, that's what the court says is reasonable. We say court, I gather the only time you find a decision on it would be if some landlord in an office building or something like that. That's the standard commercial involved, but these things. I think probably the best thing to do in this is to have staff and Charlie try to address himself to these problems and come back with some amendments to work from there rather than committing this time. But in other words, come back and show where we can amend this bill to accomplish what they think they feel should be accomplished by this bill. If that's the satisfaction of the committee, that's what we ought to do. Now, if you leave, another thought comes on this by something to bring to our attention so that we don't come back and have. I agree with you entirely, so to be sure, but there's got to be some recourse on the part of the whole party. And it would be highly desirable, as far as I'm concerned, to make it possible without court out of church. Because it makes it so expensive that too often legitimate claims are abandoned for that reason. That's right. And I don't know how to do that unless we can change the law with respect to small claims courts to have it, because there all you got to do is go in and after a certain amount say you want to have a jury trial. By law might be amended to prohibit that in the event that the landlord can dispute for a certain amount. I don't know. Then we look back and bring it to attention. I think one of the greatest contributions we could make would be to have some type of referee thing or something where the party can go through and have things from there. And have it done quick. Chief justice, the hard thing to find.
We passed Senate Bill 42 in the floor of the Senate. I was not here when the bill was reported out. I had some correspondence from some small towns in East Georgia who were concerned about the effect of a proposed bill in front of the committee on mobility to operate community, rural community ambulance. Somebody told me that there was another bill that we considered in my absence. Although there was no action taken, but there were proposed amendments that these people found objectionable, and we didn't act on the amendments at that last.
Let me tell you what occurred. We had two hearings on the bill. The rural fire district showed up, they were operating the standing group, and what they were here for, the last session of the legislature put a clause in there that they could not compete the private entity. Rural fire. So Butler Ambulance moved into an area out in Washington County where there was a rural fire that was operating there, filed suit in court and slowed them down. And the court held in favor of the rural fire and not in favor of Butler Ambulance, the private. So they came in to get that amendment taken out because they felt this was going to happen probably in several counties in the state. The private ambulance attorney was here and testified.
rural fire district, and many voluntary and associates were representatives testified. So we passed the bill before with taking out that clause that prohibited competition between the rural fire district and private entity. At that time,
we also, excuse me, Chairman, also put in a,
oh yeah,
put them out to grandfather provision and over the vote for any RFP.
Does that require any rural fire district before the voting out of the vote of the people? So they went out to the floor, and then the private ambulances appeared on the scene, and the courtesy to another senator, we brought the bill back to the committee. So we said, here are the private ambulances again. Although prior to going out, I'd asked the attorney if they had anything else they wanted to offer, and he said no. So we came back here, the private ambulances appeared, still did not have an amendment. And we brought it back to the understanding that they had an amendment that everybody agreed upon. And so they came before, testified, had no amendment, had nothing in writing, and were very vague, really, what they wanted. And so at that point, we passed it back out again. We passed. Now,
well, they were, excuse me, they were vague in the sense to amend it. I think they were fairly clear that they didn't want to go past.
That's really what they wanted to do. I think that's a fair statement. But I received more landlord tenant. I still receive telegrams in mail on Senate Bill 42, and the Greens have been very active for the week. I must have received, I told 100 communications, or the packet, as we pass it out in the first time. Now, I want to put that in that context, John, so you can put your question in the same context.
There's also a standard, standards bill in the House
that right.
We refer to and talk about as a possible alternative to 42, or as an addition to 42, and that was one of the tenth amendments I think somebody offered, is that 42 be conditioned upon the standard bill for ambulances in the House, which we don't have.
Did was it communication from Fossil by any chance? It wasn't from Fossil. We have got Fossil more than any other city.
It's an important city.
Yes, it is.
Don't you forget.
Okay, I
think we have
a
graphic
model
that
we have.
Do
you
intend
to take any action on Senate Bill 2121?
What may I ask? 2121.
Oh, it's
total. How's
the thing end? Okay. Thank you. No, it's not
on the agenda. When is it going to be on?
Oh, thank you. For the cable TV, Thursday, yeah, we've got a, for a pickup, are we going to have some, this cable TV, oh no, 393, panic reason,
why don't we put 321 on it,
maybe? Well, we may, well, we shouldn't do that, because then we get people popping notes, and I just don't like it. We try to give everybody 10 days notice on this, and I think that's the way
to do it. Well, we already had a hearing, you don't need 10 days notice on a work session.
Well, I think maybe not 10 days notice on a work session, but I think that have more
to do. Well, Mr. Chairman, if we don't connect, don't
pass
Senate
Bill
221
and you
object
to
passing the bill
that requires
the prosecutor
to take the trust to the attorney to trust. Senator, I want to explain to you, you remember the day that Senate 221, I think Senator Durst had been residing here at that time, and I was in and out, and reading by, and kind of carrying the question a little bit, and I want to find out something about the bill.
Okay.
And I'm sure what I do, then I will do it if I'm in a lighted room and not a dark room. Okay, now, is there anybody here on Senate Bill 389? I can barely remember the only time I got a date on that bill.
Yeah, why don't we refer to one of
them? Refer to
frankly, I have no problem with the bill.
If the significance is that a member of the staff, Department of Revenue, has to come in and say some commissioners object to spending their time on tax matters in the county, where I might have been inclined to support it, I think I'll oppose it on that ground alone. I think maybe the commission ought to spend more time on it. On the getting of the money, as opposed to just the spending of it. I think it might not be a bad idea to keep them on there. I try to keep an open mind, but I'm sure I'm convinced that a commissioner shouldn't participate in meetings.
It's a contradictory, but I like to move a little bill to get them out of it, and take a little class here,
why don't we decide to maybe add to the tell the Lane County delegation to attend to the committee to take it, and then we might get some reaction. Okay.